tonight on The Daily Debrief, a murdered husband's wedding ring in front of jurors as prosecutors try to tie his wife to a love triangle murder. Plus, a convicted Chicago cop wants a new trial after killing a teenager. Also, why three men crashed this truck through this storefront. That's tonight on The Daily Debrief for Friday, December 14th.
Good evening, everybody. Closing arguments in the case of a Florida woman being tried on charges she was involved with the murder of her husband 18 years ago. We are calling it the so-called Love Triangle Murder Trial. Denise Williams of Florida faces charges for allegedly planning to murder her husband, Mike Williams. Mike had a friend named Brian Winchester. Winchester testified he was the shooter. He married Denise Williams after her husband, Mike, was out of the way. Here's some of the backstory. Mike Williams disappeared on a duck hunting trip in the year 2000. Back then, people thought he drowned and was maybe even eaten by alligators. Normally, it takes 5 years for Florida authorities to declare a missing person dead. Denise Williams sought that designation after only 6 months so that she could collect her husband's life insurance and Social Security valued at more than $2 million. At trial, Denise Williams faced these three charges: conspiracy to commit first-degree murder itself, and being an accessory to murder after the fact. During closing arguments today, prosecutors tried to make the link between Denise Williams and the crimes charged. The tactic, strangely enough, was to start out by talking about the trigger man, Brian Winchester.
We know on December 16th, 2000, Jerry Michael Williams, Mike Williams, was murdered. It was initially classified as a missing person case. The shoddy homicide investigation, because it was not a homicide investigation. But we know now that man murdered him. Brian Winchester. We know that everybody involved here are longtime friends. Brian, Denise, Kathy Thomas, Mike, all longtime friends, went to North Florida Christian School together, went to Florida State University together. Brian Winchester was in love with Denise Williams. Long time. We know that Brian and Denise actually got married on December 3rd, 2015. 13 days from the anniversary, the fifth anniversary of the murder. We know at the time that he died that Mike Williams had multiple life insurance policies. $250,000, $500,000, and $1 million. All of which Denise Williams was the sole beneficiary of. We know that final one, that $1 million policy, was drafted by Brian Winchester the summer before he murdered Mike Williams. The question you have is, how does she fit in the picture? How does she fit into the murder? The conspiracy for murder, and helping him after the murder.
The prosecutor then turned toward testimony from friends who discussed conversations where Denise Williams wanted trigger man Brian Winchester to not know that, or to know rather, that she was not talking, and there's a recording.
Brian Winchester goes and talks to Dr. Mnookin prior to the arrest. And what does he tell him? He says, I'm worried that Denise is going to go to law enforcement and that she's going to tell him about a murder that happened and what she knows many years ago, the murder of Mike Williams. Prior to the arrest. After the arrest, within the week of Denise going and talking to law enforcement and being interviewed by Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and talked to about the murder of Mike Williams, she calls her good friend Kathy Thomas and says, tell Marcus to tell Brian I didn't say anything. Kathy Thomas came, she testified to you, and told you that's what happened. But you don't have to take her word for it.
Well, I mean, I know that you know something, Denise, because whenever I was going out to see Marcus, you're like, tell Marcus to tell Brian I'm not talking.
Yeah.
And I knew what that meant.
The prosecutor argued that the confession of trigger man Brian Winchester was corroborated by evidence found with the victim's body, and therefore that Winchester was also trustworthy about the involvement of Denise Williams. The motive? The life insurance.
Follow the money. What an investigative partner is it? Homicide investigation, you look to the spouse, follow the money. $1 million, $500,000, $250,000, $1.75 million. That she is the beneficiary of. Not Brian Winchester. She. And when you add all that up, each and every element of that conspiracy has been met.
Joining me tonight is criminal defense attorney William Kickham from Boston. Good to see you in studio tonight here in
New York.
Good
to be here. Good to be here.
Okay, so the prosecution seems awfully fixated on Brian Winchester, the trigger man here. He admitted it. He has an immunity agreement. Is this a case of possible buyer's remorse for the prosecution, giving him so much immunity here?
It might be, but the bottom line question here in every one of these cases is always motive, motive, motive. Why did a given defendant or a witness do or not do or say or not say what they say or did? Why did they do that? They're trying to expose his motives here as being self-interested. And I think they made, in closing, a pretty good argument concerning the defendant.
Is it a big enough link to get a conviction on these top charges?
Well, as we talked about before with Rachel, this is not a single piece of evidence is not going to convict her, okay? It's going to be the multiplicity of evidence, the collaboration of everything involved before, during, and after this murder that's going to convict her or not convict her. It's not one thing. It's the cumulative nature of the evidence. That's what the jury's going to have to weigh here, and that's what the prosecution is hammering on.
Let's talk about some of the testimony of the friends. They suggest, at least it suggests to me, that Winchester was telling the truth when he testified that he told Denise Williams that he shot her husband, because that was part of a later conversation. But is all of that proof that Denise Williams was involved in the beginning? You know, she found out about it from him later on, and the friends seem to corroborate that. But does that point back to the very beginning of this? Prosecutors are trying to make that leap. I'm not sure they made it as successfully as perhaps they should have.
They didn't make it in a concrete way, okay? But they did add that one additional element to put in cumulatively with everything else. Would that piece of evidence on its own convict her? No. But in a cumulative, additive way, might it? It might.
One little bit here and there.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You're talking about a scale and dropping pieces of sand onto the scale to get it to tip.
And eventually it might. Of course, jurors are still deliberating this case. We're keeping an eye on the courtroom. In the meantime, let's move on to the defense. Attorneys there accused Brian Winchester of lying about Denise Williams' involvement in her husband's death. They then discussed the breakup for the subsequent marriage of Denise Williams and trigger man Brian Winchester.
Denise Williams was going through a divorce. A divorce. Did not appear to have any philosophical, religious, or moral objections to divorce against Mr. Winchester. In fact, the testimony suggests that she had been separated from him since 2012 and had actually filed for divorce in 2015. No divorce problem there. No divorce problem at all. It was a bad marriage. Brian Winchester was a bad husband. Mr. Winchester was a controlling husband. He was a controlling man. And he did not like to be told no. He was the type of man who did not like to have someone tell him what to do. Because what was he? He was a financial planner. He sold insurance. He planned, and he sold. He planned, and he sold.
Keep in mind that Brian Winchester kidnapped Denise Williams as their marriage was falling apart. It was after that kidnapping that Denise Williams went to police.
But on August 6, 2016, Brian Winchester went to Denise Williams' home at between 2 and 3 a.m., because, as he testified, that's when it's darkest. He brought a gun, a backpack. He says a blanket. Agent Devaney says a tarp. He crawled into the back of her SUV. He sat there and he waited for hours. Periodically, he would take a spray bottle of water and make sure he sprayed the window so she wasn't going to be able to see him when she went to her car. Brian Winchester, at approximately 7 a.m., as Denise Williams was coming out of her home on her way to work, crawled over two rows of seats, scared her, put a gun to her ribs, and he kidnapped her. He kidnapped her with a firearm. He did not crawl over with a couple of concert tickets and ask her if she wanted to go see Sister Hazel. He kidnapped her at gunpoint. So he takes her at gunpoint to do God knows what. With a gun, with a tarp, with a sheet, with bottles. What was he going to do with her? What was he going to do to her? But she talks him down. She calms him down enough to get him to let her go. This man who supposedly knows the deepest, darkest, most heinous secret that Denise Williams plotted and planned for the murder of Mike Williams.
The defense attacked the state for failing to recognize the implication of the kidnapping and for allegedly jumping to conclusions.
And if it's true, ladies and gentlemen, a jury, why does Denise Williams go to the police? The man with a secret that could lock her up, she goes to the police. While she's at the Leon County Sheriff's Office, giving her report, telling them what happened, telling them about the gun, about the tarp, about the blanket, about the threat, about being kidnapped. While she is there, telling law enforcement about how she had been victimized. In comes Agent Devaney, FDLE, working a case forever, hadn't gotten anywhere, didn't have anything. Boy, they had some suspicions. Why do they have suspicions? Because it's always the spouse.
Defense then opened up on a full attack on trigger man Brian Winchester.
Mr. Winchester is a murderer and a liar. And he's in jail. He doesn't like being in jail and he doesn't want to go to prison. From his own lips, I don't want to go to prison. So what does Mr. Winchester decide to do? Well, what do we know about Mr. Winchester up to this point? He's a planner. He's a salesman. There's one other thing about Mr. Winchester that's relevant at this point. He's already planted evidence before. Don't forget the hat. Remember the hat? Brian Winchester is out on Lake Seminole riding around with his dad, lying to everybody about what happened, lying about what he knew, lying about what he did. That didn't stop him from planting evidence. He put a hat out there. He planted evidence. So in the summer of 2017, after spending a year in jail and recognizing that his obstruction of justice and witness tampering plans were not going to work, I got nothing else to do, and I'm a planner, I'm a salesman, and I'll obstruct justice. So what do I have to do? I will come up with not a life insurance policy. I am going to come up with a Brian life policy. I am going to come up with a way to not only get out of the serious, serious trouble I'm in, the life felony that I'm looking at with Judge Hankinson, I'm going to give the state something so good, they're going to give me a free pass to murder. They're going to let me get away with it. And as icing on the cake, I get revenge on Denise Williams for turning me into the police.
And of course, after the defense, the prosecution gets a rebuttal argument. During prosecution arguments, The prosecutor tugged at the jury's heartstrings. Look very carefully at the gold object sitting on the railing. To the left is the courtroom. To the right, out of view, is the jury. That is the victim's wedding ring. It was buried underground with his body for years. The prosecutor wanted to make sure the jury saw it and focused on it. Back to attorney William Kickham, who joins us in studio tonight. Let's talk about that wedding ring. Focus on emotion here, and critics would say that's because the prosecutor doesn't have a lot of strong facts on some of these charges.
Very effective. And you have to remember that between the two attorneys, between the defense attorney and the prosecution, the prosecution has the harder burden. Mm-hmm. They have the more difficult burden. They need every piece of evidentiary, emotional, and factual evidence they can get. I thought that was a very good tactic.
It was a good tactic. Let's talk about trial advocacy. That's a good piece of trial advocacy on behalf of the prosecution. And again, I'm being critical here, but the prosecution's overall strategy was a little bit dry. I thought the defense had some great zingers in there. They had memorable lines. They had a theory. And the theory made sense. Wait a minute. This guy who got up on the stand, Brian Winchester, who admitted he was the trigger man, he's the one that's got this history of scheming, and he's a professional at it.
Exactly. You know, it was very good in the defense's remarks there was that he's a salesman. He's a salesman. And he know what did he sell? He sold life insurance policies. And what's he selling now? A new life policy, one for himself. He's a planner. He's a schemer. He knows how to do these things. He's a salesman. And that's what he's doing here, selling the wrong story. I thought it was a very effective tactic.
I thought it was as well. Okay, look, the prosecutor admitted at the beginning of this case, look, we're not going to have phone records the way we would have in a modern trial. We're not going to have all the text messages or Facebook messages because this disappearance and death happened way back in the year 2000. The prosecutor tried to get that out of the way and say, don't hold us to the same burden you would hold us in a trial about a death that happened last year.
He's basically talking about the totality of evidence. You're right. He's saying, look, we don't have these records, we don't have phone records, we don't have that. But what we're going to present to you are circumstances, and the totality of those circumstances are what the jury needs to consider here. The cumulative additive evidence. In other words, as I said before, think of a two-sided scale of justice. Dropping pieces of sand on one side, one after the other. Is one going to do it? No. Is two going to do it? No. But the cumulative nature of the weight of all that evidence, that's what they're hanging their case on.
Look, jurors are really taking this seriously. They had the case earlier this morning. They're deliberating into the evening here. They have asked a couple of questions. It looks like they are really trying to get into this. It's a tough case, factually.
It is. We heard earlier that there was some laughter in the deliberation room, and that could be an attempt to just jettison some tension. These people are considering someone's life in their hands. Could have been something else. It could have been them saying, that's the most ridiculous thing we've ever heard. There's no way to know.
The bottom line, though, is it looks like they're really digging into it, and they have to on a case like this. Well,
no
again,
question.
We are following that situation in the courtroom in Florida to wait and see if jurors come back with a verdict as we speak. We're going to move along, though. Still ahead tonight on the Daily Debrief. The Chicago cop convicted 2 months ago for shooting and killing a teenager now wants a new trial. Plus, a glass wall, a security camera, and it doesn't end well. What happened here is next on the Daily Debrief. Judge today refused to grant a convicted Chicago cop his wish for a new trial. Jason Van Dyke appeared today unshaven and wearing an inmate attire. A jury convicted him in early October of second-degree murder for shooting and killing a knife-wielding African-American teenager. The judge in the case today also allowed additional disciplinary proceedings to move forward against Van Dyke. He's still an unpaid employee of the Chicago Police Department. A sentencing hearing is scheduled now for next month in that case. A Florida attorney is calling for an arrest after 5 people died in a horrific car crash on Black Friday. John Phillips is representing victim Alexis Cheney's family. He told the Law and Crime Network today that he's seeking answers after Tanner Dashner allegedly caused this fiery crash but has not faced charges. Dashner is suspected by the Florida Highway Patrol of driving drunk and doing 97 miles an hour in a 30-mile-an-hour zone. Here, the victim's attorney says the evidence is clear and calls for immediate action.
That is still the case. It's been 20 days. We had a press conference yesterday, the day before yesterday, at the steps of the state attorney, kind of compelling an arrest. Florida Highway Patrol said they've tendered everything they need to do for a warrant to be issued. But we don't have an arrest. You know, there's, I understand there's an investigation, but they've confirmed there's two forms of proof of intoxication. You have 97 miles an hour. You have everything you need. No fault. It was a rear end accident. No fault of the victims. You know, it begs the question is why. And we know his father was a prominent captain with the fire department in that town. And it's one of those small Florida towns, but you know, we need to see justice.
And now to Anthony Velez with other crimes making headlines.
Here are today's top crime stories trending on LawAndCrime.com and across the country. Bill Cosby's defense team is asking for a retrial of the fallen comedian on sex assault charges. Cosby, who's been accused of sexual misconduct by over 60 women, was convicted of sexually assaulting Andrea Constand at his home in Pennsylvania in 2004. His attorneys accused Judge Stephen O'Neill of committing 11 errors, including not allowing five other Cosby accusers to testify during the trial. Cosby was sentenced to between 3 and 10 years in prison. A pastor in Michigan is under arrest for allegedly killing a transgender woman after authorities found her body in the street. 46-year-old Albert Weathers is accused of killing 36-year-old Kelly Stuff in Sterling Heights. Investigators say the victim's gender identity reportedly played a role in the homicide. Weathers now faces a charge of murder and could be hit with additional hate crime charges. Authorities in California are looking for three men caught on camera stealing an ATM from a gas station. The suspects rammed the glass storefront of a Chevron gas station in Rancho Cordova with a pickup truck and can be seen strapping something around the ATM machine before it is ripped out of the wall by the pickup truck. Investigators believe the trio unsuccessfully tried to steal another ATM earlier in the day. The suspects remain at large. Those were today's top crime stories. I'm Anthony Velez for the Daily Debrief.
Back to attorney William Kickham one last time, who's visiting from Boston. Okay, so how brazen do you have to be to smash through the window and pull an ATM out of a convenience store where there are cameras everywhere?
You either have to be very brazen or very stupid or both. And I think that, you know, we live in the digital age of information. Everything you do is recorded on camera everywhere, even in New York City or small town anywhere. To do that's pretty brazen.
Yeah, well, plenty of charges will follow if they can find them. So appreciate you coming into the studio in New York from Boston. This proves that New York and Boston can get along.
We do. We get along. It was great to be here.
All right, that's all the time we have for the Daily Debrief today. And of course, folks, we are continuing to monitor the situation in the Denise Williams courtroom down in Florida. Jurors are still deliberating in that case. Some of you will remain here on the Law and Crime Network with our coverage waiting for a verdict. For those of you who are not, I'll see you back here on the Daily Debrief on Monday.